Hello, this is Meet the Writers. I'm Georgina Godwin. My guest today is a debut novelist, but he's not new to the literary scene. His short fiction has appeared in journals in the UK and North America, and it's been commissioned for BBC Radio 4. His organisation, The Special Relationship, puts on events which experiments in live literature, and it was chosen for the British Council's International Literary Showcase. His new book, The Coward, fictionalises his own autobiography and the aftermath of the accident which changed his life. Jared McGuinness, welcome to Meet the Writers.
Hi there, thanks for having me.
I'm not sure that was the right phrase to use, fictionalises his own autobiography. What would you call this? Is it autofiction? Is it a memoir? Is it a novel?
Yeah, I mean, it is a novel. And I kind of set that out very early. It says a novel, and I kind of have a slightly spiky epigraph to kind of set the tone. But, you know, it has been referred to as autofiction, but I think that's something very specific. And I don't think it quite qualifies. And I talk about, you know, if you did a replace all with the main character's name, which, as it was published, is exactly my name, I think the book would still stand. But I knew as as someone in a wheelchair with a similar background to the main character, I was always going to be conflated. And so I kind of call it kind of a land grab. And I made the reader themselves do the work and kind of understand that to get to the book that I wanted, I had to, you know, look at some very personal and intimate, you know, of things in my life. And I couldn't deny that the main character and I, you know, do share these, you know, he comes from me and he is a part of me. And I didn't want to have that degree of plausible deniability that some other, you know, fiction writers utilize. And I wanted to kind of admit that.
So let's talk about you to begin with, to give the readers some kind of sense of who you are and where this book stems from. You were born in North America. Now, in the book, the main character, the fictionalized Jared, has huge problems with his relationship with his father. Was that the case for you?
Well, I mean, for me, I wasn't, you know, this is why it's not a memoir. I wasn't really interested in kind of exploring how I, you know, my own personal relationships. Certainly I kind of use them and I come from a family of Southern Americans and men, and there's a real kind of machismo atmosphere and this idea that we are harder than death. And, you know, I certainly kind of utilize that, but the relationship between Jack and Jared is unique and it's theirs. And that was the craft of fiction. I had kind of a greater purpose in mind, and it was kind of representing that toxic masculinity that, you know, these men see themselves as cowards and actually they are emotionally brave, and that isn't rewarded in our society. And that's why it became that title. And that's what I was interested in this relationship between Jack and Jared.
So growing up in this macho society in the suburbs of Austin, Texas, it must have been quite unusual for you to be what's described as a serious-minded child. You loved reading.
The character grew up in Texas, but I actually grew up in Florida. And, you know, I'm from the South. I come from Missouri, McGuinness. And, you know, I have family in North Carolina. But, yeah, reading was always there. And I have to say my mom was a huge reader, and she's a huge influence on me. And, yeah, I think that comes from that was kind of no problem. But I have to say that was one thing reading and education was always a huge thing from my entire family. I come from, my father's a teacher, my grandmother's a teacher, you know, my grandfather educated himself finally to get a PhD. I think it was in history, but it was education. It's a real difference of like the kind of American working class versus kind of British working class, is that it was always kind of told to me of like, go and get it, go get that education. Why shouldn't you have an education? And why not go to university? And I grew up, you know, as a very earnest 10-year-old wanting a philosophy degree, which I ended up getting. And so, you know, that was kind of how, so it was never really a problem. There was no kind of, yeah, there was nothing kind of looking down on somebody who wants to improve themselves.
Mm. Of course, the one big thing that, that both you and the character in the book share is the fact that you suffered spinal injury.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I was slightly younger, but yeah, so we were both in a kind of traumatic car accident. And that really kind of set it, you know, set the story. And it's, it kind of made me think about what was my story, and but also that, you know, this story wasn't getting told. And I would find disability portrayed in fiction, and I'd be like, that's not it at all. And it kind of agitated me finally to like write about it. And it's something I probably consciously avoided, because I didn't want to be the adjective writer, you know, the disabled writer. And I avoided it because of just how, you know, reductive our kind of conversations can be in terms of literature and the author. But it was one of these things that just kept coming until it kind of the grit, you know, in the pearl that I had, this is what I had to write this story. And this, you know, this was my kind of first novel, and I, before I'd written short stories. And yeah, so it definitely kind of came to that. And I wanted to get this story right. It was very important. And, you know, the reaction has been incredible, because, you know, I was kind of nervous, like how others would see disability portrayed, because I'm really just talking about my experiences, but disability is this kind of broad church. And yeah, the response, particularly from the disabled community, has been kind of encouraging. And I'm glad that I kind of did a good job for the team, as it were.
Your accident, though, happened 20 years ago, and I wonder how easy it was to access the memories and the reality of how it was then, because presumably, I mean, you've moved on a great deal since then.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing of the, you know, the kind of fictionalizing processes. I had to go do my research like anyone else. You know, it had been, gosh, 15, 20 years by then. And I had gotten very used to, my identity had kind of solidified, and I'm, you know, I don't really think about my disability. I move about quite easily in this world. And I had to do the research, and I had to go back and think about that really kind of emotionally vulnerable time when your sense of self is completely destroyed. And that was useful, because I was coming at it again of like, how do I communicate this story to someone who doesn't have a disability, who hasn't experienced that? And when people talk about the brutal honesty of the book, I think that's what they're getting at, is even though they haven't had this experience, they felt like they had. And that, to me, as a fiction writer, I've done my job really well. And, you know, to get them to understand what it actually is like to experience this, you know, just completely traumatic experience on your own psyche and your own sense of self, never mind the kind of physical pain that kind of continues on. Like you just have to deal with it, and you do, or you don't. And, you know, the kind of rate of suicides amongst, you know, people with spinal cord injuries is higher than the population. And yeah, it's a hard thing to deal with.
But you deal with it with such wonderful kind of black humor.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of inevitable. I think like that, you know, again, comes from my personality, but again, it was part of craft. It was, you know, I was going to take the reader on a journey. And it's structurally, you don't find out what happens to Jared until you've near the end, when you have gone on to this journey with him. And then it's, to me, it's like you've always, then now, dear reader, you've earned to find out what happened to Jared. And, you know, because throughout the novel, there's random strangers constantly ask him what happened to you. And that was my idea behind that, kind of structurally. But to just kind of batter the reader with kind of misery and pain is just not interesting to me as a reader. And I didn't want to do that to others. And I didn't want this to just be like, how much pain can one character endure? And I really wanted to kind of keep that kind of heartline of just, you know, even though we all have our traumas and we all have difficult things we're going through, but even in those, and maybe even especially in those moments, that's where our humanity lies. And that's, you know, that's where the gallows, the dark humor comes from. Mm. And that's kind of beautiful. And that's in, you know, Jack and Jared really have this repartee between them. And that's kind of how they're communicating as men, because men have to obliquely talk about their relationships. but that gave me a kind of nice way of kind of lightening the mood and kind of, you know, getting the reader to continue on and reading and stay with these characters. Because yeah, they are funny, they're great, and there's some of the outtakes are brilliant. So if there's like a DVD extended version of a novel, I really broke my heart to cut some of that stuff, but you know, there was a larger thing at hand, and that was crafting an engaging novel that would kind of, yeah, would really kind of pull the reader in throughout it.
Well, it's really interesting that you mention a kind of DVD of outtakes, because in the book you do a sort of movie-like list of credits. And I think that's not something one often sees. But of course, it does take a lot of people to get a novel from your head to the bookshelf.
Absolutely. You know, something very important to me was something that I asked for and kind of insisted upon in Canongate was incredibly, you know, the people I was dealing with were incredibly kind of indulgent. And then I think at a point they kind of realized, hey, that's pretty nice. And that was, you know, that was me just kind of that was important to me. And I kind of set myself against the last generation of authors and this kind of like lone male genius. And everyone around him has to suffer for it. And I just thought, no, that wasn't good for them. And it wasn't good for anyone else. And, you know, time and again, you see in the news that, yep, that was pretty toxic. And I wanted to kind of celebrate the community that it brings, you know, yeah, I'm at the center of it and I had to kind of toil away for a long time. But when it becomes a book and the thing that you read in front of you is a very kind of refined version, and it's got to be good just to get the attention of agents and editors, but they really made me the best I could be. And I just really enjoyed the experience. And I know it's not the same for everyone, but you know, we have kind of a shared admiration for my editor, Ella, who just really is the kind of author whisperer. And she kind of makes you think about what you're up to and why you're doing it. Mm. And I love that. And I love that process. And she's got a great laugh. So it's such an enjoyable experience.
The shape of the book is fantastic. As you say, the reader has to earn the right to know what happens to Jared. And you cut between different sections of his life. And I wonder if you could just explore that for us a bit.
The structure was kind of always there because, again, I was thinking about the reader's journey, and I'm quite interested in structure. I was a short story writer. I did short stories, and some of my favorite short stories have kind of structure in it. I kind of think about like Sarah Hall's like Butcher's Perfume. It's just kind of this concise one paragraph depiction of all of the Cumbrian history. And then on the end of it is just like this immediate slide down to the end, to the ending. And I love that. And so I wanted that in the novel. And so there is, yeah. So we bounce between Jared's kind of immediately aftermath of his accident, in which a young woman who just he initially describes as somebody said it was his girlfriend, and he doesn't correct them. It's not his girlfriend. So there's a mystery there. He takes full responsibility for her death. And then as he's kind of, he has to go back and live with his dad, who he hasn't seen for a decade. And that really triggers him thinking about his past. And you start to bounce back between. And for me, the past was always Jared thinking about what happened. It's a redrafting of his story. Like what led him to this bottom, this, you know, in an accident in which he takes responsibility for this woman's death. And he's now in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. And so that was the kind of framing I had, but functionally what it gave me was I was able to kind of bring in light and dark and kind of highlight things. And there's some lovely, for me as the author, you know, kind of resonances between what's happening in his present and why he's thinking about this period in his past. And I'm never do the kind of very obvious, I hope I don't ever do the obvious kind of like what TV does with the kind of wobbly image, the kind of like flashback, or what like American History X where it's in black and white. But to me, it's that kind of like, you know, those lovely resonances you get, and I can create some kind of structure there where like, you know, it is in my head, this kind of perfect circle. And so you near to the end, you get to the point at which brought you to the story in the first place. Mm. Yeah.
And forgiveness seems to me to be just such a strong thread running through it.
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of it, it is a kind of, you know, it is a story of redemption, and it really is about kind of letting these men like forgive themselves. And that's how they kind of come to terms with each other's past. And Jack is this kind of, you know, suburban Buddha. He's made peace with their past, but Jared hasn't. And really the story there is for these men to be on the same terms and to understand that, you know, the pain is still fresh for Jared, but Jack had time to kind of digest it. And that creates this kind of nice dynamic between the two, and kind of infuriating for Jared, because Jack is kind of this Buddha, this kind of Texas Buddha. And he has made his peace, and that creates kind of great kind of tension and dynamic, which is just perfect fodder for fiction. Mm. And yeah, and that's absolutely true. You've kind of nailed it on the head. That's what I want it to be.
A lot of the humor comes from Jared's interaction with people who are themselves reacting to his disability, to the fact that he's in a wheelchair. And he comes, I mean, he has many, many acerbic remarks. He has lovely lies that he tells. And it's just, yeah. I mean, it is very funny. But I think it's also instructive to people who have not experienced being in a wheelchair or any kind of disability in how people who are in that position would like you to react.
Yeah, well, I mean, so this is where kind of the kind of character and author get very muddled, because there's ample opportunities to kind of test drive, you know, Jared's dialogue, because people do say the most incredible stuff and things I had to cut because nobody believed it. I was like, no, people have done that. Like, you know, there's a scene, actually, I was looking through my old notes because I'm working on something else, where I was like, multiple times people have tried to literally heal me, and through a variety of deities. So it's not just, you know, I've gone through the gambit of deities, and none of them have been successful. So I don't know, maybe it's more due to their practitioners not being as faithful as they think they are.
You need more faith, Jared.
The exchange I had is that they needed more faith, and I was like, I'm gonna cut this bit because nobody's gonna believe that literally people start laying hands on you like when you're not paying attention. And so I did kind of test their dialogue, and I tested Jared's, and Jared had the character had way more anger than I thought I had. But I have to say, writing the book, I realized that Jared's anger was my anger. And there was a kind of catharsis. So when this book was ended, and it made me realize that I was kind of not admitting some of the connections that were there. And maybe that, again, kind of despite your, you know, intentions, yourself leaks into these characters. Mm. And I did a good job in that bit. And I think it creates for that. And yeah, I mean, it's just, yeah, it creates an opportunity for this. But as you say, like, I hope kind of people kind of realize, oh yeah, that's kind of me just being quite selfish and not dealing with this human being as a human being, instead dealing with their disability.
Mm. Although sometimes with the best of intentions, I mean, wanting possibly to help. And I wonder what your relationship with your chair is. I mean, you're a father, you're at the moment stay-at-home dad, although, of course, you're writing. But I wonder how that relationship has changed in this last 20 years.
Well, I mean, this is it. So they kind of talk about, and I've had conversations with other disabled writers or authors who have written about disabled characters. And it is this kind of, it is really kind of down to the personal. And so in the beginning, it was kind of this, it was, you know, and this is where I talk about in the book, he really kind of saw this as his limitation, and he was no longer, you know, no longer a full human being. And certainly I kind of went through that. And you know, for the most of the part, I don't think about it. Like, it is literally behind me. I don't see it. And I kind of move about in the world. And I kind of recently wrote about kind of when you're parenting and then your kids kind of discover your wheelchair. And that was this kind of moment of like, oh yeah, you know, I'm different. And there's this kind of almost sense of shame for the disabled that is nonsense. It's an unfair shame. But it was that moment of like, oh, I felt it again. Like, I don't want my kids to be ashamed of me. even if I have nothing to be ashamed about, because that's how disability is portrayed often in fiction and in definitely in television and in film, that it is something to be ashamed of, and it creates this kind of negative connotation, but it's just a part of me. And kind of working through that, and I was like, oh no, they're going to be fine, actually. They're going to have a better understanding of my disability than me. And that was kind of a fascinating realization, kind of, again, that I work through this time in kind of nonfiction, but kind of thinking about that, which is something I didn't really talk about in the novel, because this character was too, he didn't have a refined understanding of his disability. He was just kind of really trying to kind of just get his life together and deal with the past, really. And ultimately, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to write a book about a disabled character that wasn't about disability.
You've absolutely achieved. And of course, you have the intellectual hinterland that he lacks. You've since gone on and got a PhD in artificial intelligence.
I did. So that, I mean, that's what brought me to the UK, was I did a PhD in AI at Edinburgh. And worked for an academic for quite a bit. And then the coalition government made it hard to be an academic and a foreigner at the same time. And so I worked in industry for a bit. And then when the girls, I was always writing, I was writing short stories. And then when my girls arrived, I decided, like, well, I'll write part-time, and during the day, I'll be the stay-at-home dad, which is tough. But I mean, the coward came out of that. And that was the final draft, really kind of came in that kind of period. And it was hard, because I was full-time dad. And then, like, at night, my wife would come home and we'd literally kind of pass in the hallway as I would go and find somewhere to write. It was often a donut shop, which is why donuts appear quite a bit in the book. But it was tough. And it was really interesting as well to kind of get that perspective, because, you know, still to this day, that the primary carer is a woman. And it really kind of gave us, for our relationship, it was, the whole dynamics were right there. You know, my wife was the breadwinner. I was a stay-at-home dad. And, you know, that thing of, like, you know, you have to kind of make sure that the breadwinner is comfortable, and your needs and wants are kind of set aside, because you have to take care of the kids and then make sure that, you know, the money's still coming in, because she traveled a lot for work. Remember those days when travel was a thing. But yeah, and so she was traveling quite a bit.
You also set up, you co-founded The Special Relationship. Tell us about that.
The Special Relationship is, so that was with some other guys, and it's called The Special Relationship because it was with another American, Sam Taradash, and an Englishman, Tom Bazin, a comedian, and just kind of, and all, he writes for TV as well. Just an incredibly talented guy. His short stories are amazing. I don't know, but, really it was kind of an experiment of what is live literature, because it's a very different thing to reading to an audience versus kind of you alone with a piece of work reading. And it became much more kind of experimental. And that's when the kind of big project came out of, with the Moby Dick. It was like, how do you make, you know, kind of a one book festival? And kind of Moby Dick for me was the book that had wide enough shoulders to be able to do that, because it's quite an experimental novel. And then when you think about when he wrote it, it just kind of 19th century, just kind of mind boggling of what, you know, his ambition was for this book. And so we did this huge project of which you were involved with, and we had readers. We had half the readers were kind of well-known people, and then half the readers were from just kind of, I think we randomly chose, you know, it was just kind of audience members basically that kind of signed up for it. It was whoever wanted to do it. And it was quite incredible. That really taught me about kind of public engagement, and that, you know, the people who wanted to be involved really wanted to be involved. I thought they would just show up on the day, but we realized that actually they wanted to be involved in the process. And it was a beautiful thing. You know, it went over for 4 days. It was a huge thing. You know, we had animators, we had illustrators, we had dancers. One, because it becomes a Shakespearean play, we had actors doing a reading. It was just a phenomenal experience. We had set designers got involved. We had this amazing set. And that really kind of started me on kind of doing more experimental things. And my current project is kind of pretty much done. We just need to be able to find a place to be able to show it, because COVID is limping along and it's still making it very hard to do things live. And it's a, yeah, so we have this thing ready to go. It was a collaboration with this incredible photographer, Andy Sewell, and it really is kind of looking much more at kind of me as a parent with a disability. And yeah, we're just kind of waiting for things to calm down and that I can travel, because I moved to France, to be able to travel to the UK and do an installation, a documentation of it. And yeah, and hopefully it'll happen, but yeah. So we're still doing that. We're still kind of doing these experiments, but they're much more kind of thinking about public engagement and how to kind of involve people. So,
Jared, when you've been through something like you have, this mm-hmm. utterly life-changing experience, is there anything that phases you any longer?
That's, I do kind of joke about that. It's just, no. it's kind, and it's also, and it's, we've kind of been through it all. And, you know, something that I think about this is, so like we moved to France in October, right before lockdowns. We knew things were going to get locked down again. You could just see, because it's just the chaos of how things were kind of going and kind of the politics involved. We'd been in London a very long time. We had two kids in the meantime. The flat is very tiny. London winters are very tough for somebody who grew up in Florida. Brexit was happening. So, you know, I have a British citizenship as well, and a lot of rights. And I kind of saw myself as a European, we're going to kind of get washed away come January. So it's like, let's just go. So we rented, like, Airbnbs were incredibly cheap. So we just decamped, and sure enough, the schools closed. And so I didn't have support anyways. So I was going to be home with the girls, and my wife was working from home because her office shut. And we just had this other adventure. And I don't think I would have done that if I hadn't kind of been through what I had gone through. My wife and I had kind of, we've been together a very long time, and we kind of, we're a good team. We know how to manage that. And, you know, come February, she told her job she wasn't coming back, and they said, okay. And we just started making this life. And now my girls are, you know, mocking my accent in two languages now. Yeah, it's a great adventure. And I think, like, yeah, I have definitely having gone through this and being like, actually, but I have to say, when you're first hurt, I had incredible phobias and fears. I couldn't fly anymore. And I kind of capture that in the book, of just how this character who had traveled around the world, and he was far better traveled than I was, but he just was scared again. And that was very true. And that was from my experience of just, you are just scared. You feel so fragile, and vulnerability, right? That's a theme that I wanted to capture, of men are vulnerable, but they can't admit it. And that's where a lot of the troubles lie. If only Trump could admit that he's vulnerable, and he asked for a hug rather than kind of terror he wrought for 4 years.
Well, Jared, you have come up with an incredible victory in this book. I cannot recommend it highly enough. I think it's completely fabulous. It's called The Coward. It's published by Canongate, and it is by wonderful Jared McGuinness. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Meet the Writers, thanks to the production team of Chris Oblakwa, Nora Hall and Sophie Monaghan-Coombs. You can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, Mixcloud or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.